Hey, this is Sean Tepper, the host of Payback Time, an approachable and transparent podcast on building businesses, increasing wealth, and achieving financial freedom. I'd like to bring on guests to hear authentic stories while giving you actionable takeaways you can use today. Let's go. Let's talk about process mapping. I know, not the most glamorous subject in the world, but it's extremely important. So when companies are making or selling products, there's a lot of different processes along the way. And if you can figure out what those processes look like, you can help optimize the processes. In other words, you can sell products faster with less time. Same thing goes for services. Now, the problem is putting together a process map with Visio or some other tool can take a lot of time. Well, my next guest has created a software as a service tool that helps optimize that process. And what's really cool is as one company uses the tool within one industry, other companies that use the tool in the same industry can see the same data, so they know how to optimize their own model. This is going to be really exciting when this platform goes live. So my next guest talks about how they've been bootstrapping the company, what they're doing right now for marketing, and their go-to-market strategy on how they'll get adoption within bigger companies, which can be a pretty big challenge. Okay, let's dive in. Please welcome Sam Droshak. Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, good to have you here. So why don't you kick us off and tell us about your background?
Sure. So I'm a process scientist, and my background story kind of leads into that. I originally studied biology and chemistry and studied the natural sciences. And then right after that, I went into process work. And this was back in the early 2000s, where I was in process engineering in a more traditional sense. But then as the digital services revolution sort of took hold, there was this huge need to evolve process work to serve that clientele. And I've spent more or less my entire career kind of pushing and learning and also contributing to that space. And that's the high level notes, and I'm happy to delve into any particular part.
Well, let's dive right into your company here, which is a SaaS business. It's called Truvel Audience. Just a heads up, you can go to truvel.com, which is T-R-U-V-L-E.com. But why don't you tell us a little bit about this company? What does it do? And then we'll get into how does it make money?
Absolutely. Truvel is a, as you mentioned, it's a SaaS company. And what we're trying to do is we've taken me and my co-founders, we've been in the consulting space, and we've been developing these process science-based methodologies to help people with better process management. And ultimately, we're trying to democratize all that consulting knowledge and application into scalable software products. So our hope is that all of our software solutions, whether it's our very first product, which is specifically a process mapping solution, through tracking our roadmap to build kind of process management utilities, it's the idea that we create that consulting accessibility. So a lot of small and medium businesses that might not be able to hire an Accenture or a BCG or a McKinsey, they can actually bring these tools, the knowledge and the methods in-house. And that's really what we're trying to create with Truvel.
Gotcha. Just to back up a second, did you work for a management consulting firm?
Yeah. So I took a tour with Accenture myself, and then I also consulted internally at various places. And I also have my own consulting company. That's what's rolled into Truvel. So I've been in the consulting space probably for 12 years in various capacities.
Sure. Gotcha. And when did you leave Accenture and then start your own firm and then start Truvel? Is that kind of the, you could say, how the dominoes fell?
More or less. So I was doing internal consulting before I went to Accenture. And then after, I went back and kind of created some more consulting roles within larger companies, because there's this huge push in the last, 10 years where center of excellences around process are starting to pop up everywhere in large enterprises. So I was kind of jumping around when I took my experience from Accenture and started to build out some of these center of excellences. And then in parallel, I built my own consulting brand. And that's kind of how that went.
Got it. Okay. So let's get into, dive in a little further on the why behind creating this software. It's not the most sexy thing, but we like non-sexy businesses because they can really solve a problem, especially if they're sticky. You know, Warren Buffett teaches us don't invest in anything too speculative or glamorous. You want to find those boring businesses. So let's get into that. How does this work a little bit?
Sure. And I'm going to caveat this because in terms of talking about this very unsexy problem, it excites me more than anything in my life. So if I start to go totally, down a rabbit hole, please just interrupt and stop.
Run with the line.
Yeah. Generally, process mapping is the solution for people who are looking to get better process data. I'll frame it that way. And the problem, it's a massive problem, and it's becoming more... Basically, people are growing more awareness that this is a massive problem every day, because digitization, especially within services, is starting to become the entire marketplace, essentially. And what that means is if you're increasingly digitizing either through globalizing your workforce, people working from home, you know, bringing on more SaaS products, what that means is you need to have a good idea of what your process is, but it's becoming less and less tangible. So the need for having process data is becoming more paramount. And there's no really structured way or standard to collect process data. That's the really problem we're trying to tackle. And what I mean by that is if I hired six consultants and I gave them the same subject, let's just say I'm in a bank and I want to know what is the particular service for booking a loan or something like that.
Right.
Those six consultants are going to draw you six different pictures. There's no standard in which to actually structure process data. And what that means is those six diagrams are going to be at different detail levels. They'll have different conventions and they all might tell a story, but none of those data sets are comparable. And this is a very subtle problem that most people are running into. And it's really keeping this whole process space very nascent and at a very low maturity level, because one person's process work can't really be compared in a database to anyone else's process work.
Right.
So to kind of wrap that thought up, process mapping, it's not just giving people another whiteboard or a blank canvas where they have to create their own language, because there's a lot of tools out there where you can map process. At Truval, we have a very strong opinion and a very strong methodology that we are, you know, positing as scientific, so that when you map in our product, you're getting the benefit of the right method, the right detail level, and your data will be comparable to anyone else's data that maps in the tool. So that's the real problem we're solving: the lack of common language, the lack of comparable data, and generally just a lack of maturity in the process space that's still pretty prevalent across any other alternative.
Sure. You provided a good example there, just to back up a second, because I have some experience in the mortgage industry, and it's a very laborsome process to go from step one, somebody's, you know, going through their application to apply to get a loan, to getting the money. There's so many checks and balances, processes, software platforms. And you're right, if you go to one person, it can be this path. But if you go to somebody else, it can be an entirely different path. And how much time they take can be all over the board. So with your software, does it help a company like standardize a process and then show like, hey, here's how much time you were spending and here's how much time you can save? Does it do anything like that?
So it doesn't yet, but what you're doing is you're basically forecasting our entire roadmap.
Okay. So,
yeah. And this is the exciting part. And this is what gets me really jazzed up about this business, because in order to do that, to do what you just said, you have to have a standard data source to work with. Mm-hmm. Because if everyone has a different version of process data, then there's no analysis that can be done. There's no structured analysis or standard analysis that can be done. So really the first phase of our rollout is let's create such a low friction, easy to adopt experience for people to start generating good quality process data. The next step that's really coming is, okay, now we can analyze that data, especially when we have more data points that can be compared and build a database of this type of data. So eventually what you'll get is you map your process. Let's say it's mortgages. You could actually say, how are other companies, for example, doing mortgages that are small regional banks, 50 employees using this system suite? And you could actually have the system generate comparables in terms of process design, efficiency, because you could have the same person doing mortgage loan underwriting, but you could look and ask the system, well, do I have an efficient structure? And part of the analysis in the process world is just benchmarking. Well, actually, we have another company in the database that's doing the same revenue, the same volume of business as you with 15 less headcount, or like 15% less cost per unit. That's the kind of data that we're talking about. And that's a new world. We don't have access to anything like that today. But even within that, saying you have too many steps, you have too many handoffs, here's a heat map of basic waste just based on lean principles. This will all become available and is stuff that we're really excited about. But that foundational data layer is the first step to making that a reality.
Right. Are you pulling in data from another source right now, or are you in a position where you want to bring on a lot of customers so the more people use the tool, the more valuable it becomes?
The latter. Yeah. And a lot of these models, we do have a pretty good data set, because this is where we collectively have about like 30, 40 years of practitioner experience collecting data in the field by hand. But it's only so far, like you can't scale that far when you're just doing this with consulting. But the interesting thing is what brought about this company, this Truval concept, is that when you use the same type of process methodology, process science in every client, you start to see the fundamentals and how they're fundamentally the same. The science holds, whether you're a financial services company, whether you're a manufacturing facility, whether you're in healthcare, you can use the same process techniques and derive incredible and comparable insights. So the goal is get people really jazzed up about process mapping, build that database, and then the insights are going to be revolutionary. I mean, it's really endless, the different things you could do with that.
Right. As soon as you started talking about heat maps, I'm like, okay, I have to test drive this thing. See where all the issues are happening and let's tackle those and get the waste out of the way. Now, knowing that the tool becomes more valuable the more people use it, I assume you're going vertical on this. Like, have you decided, hey, I want to tackle, for example, the mortgage industry, or insurance is another good industry where there's a lot of processes. Is that your go-to-market strategy?
So to be honest, our go-to-market strategy is kind of, we'd love to hit everyone all the time, which is a horrible market
shotgun
strategy.
Yes.
Yeah, it's hard. It's kind of my Achilles heel personally, and I'm happy to admit that. You know, I want to create, I don't want to create verticality in some ways, and I don't want to be too industry specific, because I want to show people that it's really industry agnostic, the insight, the value. Now, from an actual tactical strategy, is that going to work? I don't know, because there's a lot of wisdom in just saying, let's just try to sell insurance and all of our marketing can align, or let's just try to sell healthcare or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So we're still in the experimental phase with how that's going to work. But I think generally we're a young company. We're just on the cusp of releasing this product that we're talking about. And I think, you know, as a smaller group, whichever companies in our portfolio of clients or whichever enterprises that want to partner up early, that might guide that decision more so than it being consciously curated.
100% agree with you. Like, you do start out with the shotgun approach a little bit, but you know, I would be totally open-minded. Let's say it's, like you said, healthcare leans into this first. All right, go that direction and run with it. Get one customer, use the data, get a case study, and then get another and then another, and just let it snowball from there.
Yeah. And in general, I think that speaks to a principle that I always espouse in relation to entrepreneurship, which is you can have the best design and plan, but where are you planted right now? Just what's the easiest and most accessible resources and network, you know, players that are available to you? Because a lot of time, that's the lowest cost. Let that shape your momentum a little bit versus trying to, you know, over-design everything.
Right, right on. Okay. Well, let's get into the business a little bit. The name Truval, where did this come from?
So there's a few practical aspects of that. There's no 4 or 5 letter .coms that exist anymore. So some of it is just a practical game of where can we get a .com domain that's short enough, that's recognizable. And I always like to say that because that's not a sexy answer. There's not like some major story behind that, but it's the reality we live in, right? We don't want to, you know, for a particular market that's not super tech progressive, you don't want to be using .ios. You don't want to be using, you know, .new or whatever it is. So that's part of it. But we actually landed on Truval. It's just an amalgamation of true value. And a lot of our products actually speak to process work that results in waste reduction, being able to actually do value analysis. So in that way, it is married to our mission quite well. And that's really the whole story there.
I love the transparency there, because it's like, okay, how do you find a 2-syllable short word? You know, like you've got Google, Facebook, Uber, like, and get these short names, 2 syllables. They're all gone. We got really lucky with ticker, but it, as you've seen, probably have seen, ticker is not T-I-C-K-E-R. That's long gone. So we're T-Y-K-R. It's all right, run with it. 2 syllables, short enough. It's a .com. Let's go.
I mean, it's a real practical reality that you have to face. I mean, I've watched people who get really excited and they'll spend hours in sessions with their co-founders trying to think of the perfect brand name. And then there's, you know, it's been bought up and it's $50,000 to buy the domain. I mean, you just can't go that route. Like, to some extent, you have to have practical constraints to guide your path a little bit. And I think that's okay. But it's just, you have to let go of some of your creative liberty sometimes.
Yes. And at the end of the day, it's like, your customers really don't care. They want the value. Like, what do they get out of it? They don't care about your name or your logo.
Yeah, it's a lot of times your company's energy and the value that you bring to the market is just associated with the word. The word could be random nonsense for the most part. It's just a bonus if it's aligned with what you're doing, but it's that association that's created in a strong, you know, customer relationship that it could be anything. You know, the best companies we know, we just think of it, whatever their name is, it's just an impression of the value that they're serving the marketplace more so than the word is taken literally.
Right on. Are you guys bootstrapped or did you raise capital?
We are bootstrapped. So we are just, we're about $400,000 in right now. And that's just a combination of founders capital. And that's really driven development and also just marketing and some of our basic contractors that we've used. And that's really been in an 18-month to about 2-year timeline.
Yep.
And that's where we're at. And I think we'll continue to bootstrap. I mean, we're hoping to become revenue generative in 2024 and cover costs and eclipse that if we're really successful, but that's where we're at.
Gotcha. Okay. And how big is the team?
The team is 2 co-founders, a CTO, a full-time marketing person, and then we have a development team in Colombia.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll burn through capital pretty quick. You got a sizable team already. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you I assume you're not the coder. You're not writing any code. You're more sales, marketing, operations.
Yeah. So I'm going to be doing all that. And no, I'm not a coder, but I am the process scientist. So I'm really trying to, my primary role is creating the actual business requirements, maintaining the integrity of our knowledge, and making sure that the tool has the technical accuracy to deliver our value promise. And then our CEO, I would say, is also in that role, but he's focusing more on the business development, the sales and marketing side, coordinating our marketing resources. And then we have a CTO who is managing the development. He codes himself. He's an excellent backend, you know, actual code writing. Mm-hmm. And then he oversees the cohesion of the development resources that we have in our outsourced operation.
Yeah, makes sense. And between you and your partners, a 50-50 split?
Yes.
Nice. Good for you guys. All right, let's get into how much do you charge for this? What's the range, low end, high end?
Yep. So low end is $39 a month, and that's for annual subscription. And then it goes up to $49 a month for just a month-to-month subscription. And then we have enterprise licensing, which is Call Us, and we haven't flushed it out yet. So that's a free space. So depending on who you are and what you're looking for and how it might help us develop, the price could be anywhere on the board for that. And our pricing really is based on, we did some initial polling. We're looking at basically just a cost savings analysis on the majority of our first personas that could be buying this product. If it saves them an hour a month at the salary levels that most of them are in, that's going to make up for the use of the product. And that's the basic logic behind our pricing structure currently.
Gotcha. Okay. And this seems to be a tough point for a lot of entrepreneurs is, what do I do for marketing and sales? So knowing that your product is pre-revenue and you're kind of gearing up to do a big launch, are you kind of reaching out to a few businesses to, can we get you to do a pilot for a limited time? In return, we would love feedback and potentially a testimonial or case study. Are you doing anything like that?
Yes, that and all of the above, that's really within all of our personal networks. So we're also, in addition to Truval, all the founders are also maintaining relationships with other clients, and we're doing some consulting work also, because we're obviously paying into the business and not paying out.
Yeah.
So we're maintaining some consultative work to generate revenue in all of our respective businesses. And in those regards, we're warming those clients up to be that kind of joint partnership for the product. We're also calling our own Rolodex, since we've been in the consulting space for many years, and starting to get feelers out there now that the product's viable of, hey, do you need this? Do you know anyone that can deploy this? And also just looking for strategic partnerships with other businesses that are going to use the product with their own sales. So it's that shotgun again, where we've got a lot of resources within our own personal networks, and we're seeing what's the best way to leverage and test with that like first concentric circle before we want to, our cost per acquisition would go up if we start getting out of that zone.
Yeah, absolutely. If I were in your position, I'd be all about like, let's get some people to test drive this thing, work out the bugs, give feedback on what features or tweaks you can make, and then get some customers, get some momentum. And then you're probably thinking ahead of this because you've got management consulting experiences. You go to some of those firms and say, hey, how about an implementation deal here where you could help implement this into a company and you could take a cut of the sales? Or I know Accenture, I've done a lot of work with them and Deloitte, and it's like they will integrate like a huge software platform, and they'll be paid the service implementation to make it happen, get everybody trained, up to speed, all that good stuff. It can be it's a fun channel partner play for your model.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's all part of the conversation. I mean, and there's some ways the product, again, we talk about how not sexy process mapping, let's say, is, or process requirements generation is, but it's so ubiquitous for so many different use cases. There's this aspect of being overwhelmed because we can insert this in terms of product fit in the many different scenarios, it's almost, that's the overwhelming part, like picking the first channel and picking the first use cases that you want to target. But I think a lot of it's, a lot of what you're saying is viable. Anything could really lead to a great kind of expansion of exposure and different angles to take the product. So I think for us as founders, the challenge is really, how do we want to kind of rocket it into the marketplace and then control its trajectory? Or do we want to control the trajectory? These are kind of the strategic questions we're juggling internally.
Yeah. Let's take a quick commercial break. Hey, this is Sean. I'd like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. I know there's a lot of other podcasts you could be listening to, so thanks for taking the time to listen to this one. I have a quick request. If you have a moment, could you please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review? The reason is the more ratings we get and the higher those ratings are, the more Apple will share us with the world. So thanks in advance for doing that. And then I have a quick comment. If there are any questions you want me to ask the guests, please head over to our Ticker Facebook group. You could drop a question right there. I'll go ahead and make a note and I'll do my best to ask that question on the podcast. All right, back to the show. Have you identified a certain persona or maybe job title in companies that might use this more than others? I kind of mentioned maybe analysts would get into this, but process engineers, I'm thinking about manufacturing companies that have process engineers. But anyway, I'll let you, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, you pretty much hit it on the head, right? So our kind of model use case was lean practitioners who are actually their full-time careers going and doing Kaizen events, lean facilitation, people who are actually practitioners of lean in various contexts. But in terms of our internal targets, exactly right. Business analyst, process engineer, even project managers to a certain extent who are actually looking to source tools for their project teams. But largely that market is productized within larger corporations. But it's actually still a very nascent job role. Like I was mentioning earlier in my history, it's only in the last decade or so where people have started creating centers of excellence around the process skill set because it's become such a need, but it's not really a well-articulated need. So you can't just say, hey, process analysts and know that there's process analysts at every company. It's still kind of trying to find those people by the various roles that they're being called.
Yeah, it's not easy, but if you can find one in a certain business, in many cases, you can kind of lift and shift, go to another company and be like, okay, so I'm looking for the equivalent to John Doe in this company to Susie Kim over here in this company that has a similar role. Let's get her using this tool, trying it out. And this leads to another good point. And with payback time, I'll do pause moments, break the fourth wall and kind of talk to the audience a little bit and feel free to chime in. But something Sam and I were talking about offline is, it can be really hard to sell an enterprise software from the top down. What that means is going to your C-suite, like your CEO, and be like, hey, you need this tool. And then they're like, sure, I do. And then they roll it out to their whole company. Like that rarely happens. What you want to do is kind of get somebody using the tool from within. Like I have a lot of experience with software engineering. So get them using a software engineering tool, get them excited in their teams, and then let that excitement bubble up within the company, and that will sell itself. That's a lot easier approach. So I see the same thing happening with Truval.
It's going to have to happen that way. It's such an apt commentary because you could, you know, sell yourself hoarse trying to make a CEO understand the nuance of where their process requirements are going awry and like where their business analysis is not really plugged in correctly. It's just a tough sell. It's a very... In a way, like I said, it's a huge market, but it's a very nuanced conversation in a way because it's the root cause of a lot of things that end up catching on fire. Software implementation's gone wrong, inability to communicate or coordinate operations with vendors. And it's all like the same thing where we don't have the ability to communicate our process requirements properly. But getting people to go there in a sales context is almost impossible. Not at the level that we're talking about selling a CEO or like even like a it'd be kind of a very silly sales strategy, at least on the onset. Now, if Truval really went big, I think you can change that dynamic as the company evolves, right? When you have the credibility and you have an established user base, but initially that ground up, it may seem more laborious, but it's probably a more realistic entry strategy.
100%. Yeah. Before we go to the rapid fire round, I have to ask this question. In your journey here leading up to a go live, what is a big challenge you faced and how did you overcome it?
Sure. So the biggest challenge we face is on the coding front. We're dealing with some actual very proprietary stuff. And we didn't anticipate that, right? Like you kind of go into software development thinking everyone's already done everything to a certain extent. It's just researching, finding the right papers or finding the right libraries so that your developers can kind of cobble together what you want. But we ran into some really unique challenges on line optimization and some of the finer points of intelligent automated formatting, because this is a big problem in this industry. Mm-hmm. And we had to really do research and we had to really go to the drawing board and kind of build proprietary code and algorithms to meet the business requirements. And it's still a work in progress, to the point where the challenge was we didn't think we could launch because it's just not serviceable. We just didn't have a code base, and writing that kind of thing from scratch can be a real hurdle. From a cost perspective, like a burn rate on using outside development resources and various things. So it was a major negotiation for a few months there, trying to figure out where we're going to take that. And we overcame that challenge just by staying the course, making a lot of negotiations, trying to figure out from an ROI perspective what we could borrow from existing solutions versus what we had to go from scratch. And it's still an ongoing conversation. But I think because we're launching, we've solved it to a certain extent and we've highlighted other features, you know, in recompense for this one being more complicated, but we're really hoping we can get it across the finish line here in the next few months.
Awesome. With that in mind, when's the expected go live?
So soft launch of the product is actually as of this recording, which I don't know when this will be around, but it right at the end of 2023. And then we're hoping that we'll be able to launch formally and like have it people want to purchase at full price sometime probably first or second quarter next year.
Sure. Nice. All right. Very exciting. I got to get my hands on this thing. Again, I got to see these heat maps and how this thing looks.
Well, heat maps aren't out yet. Right now, just process mapping. But if you start early and you build all your process maps, once the heat maps turn on, then you're just going to be able to press buttons and do the things you need.
I like it. That's awesome. All right. So, well, let's dive into the rapid fire round. This is the part of the episode where we get to find out who Sam really is. If you can, try to answer each question in 15 seconds or less. You ready?
Ready.
All right. What is your favorite podcast?
So I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but I could say when I do listen to audio media, I listen to fantasy books, and Project Hail Mary was one of the best ones I've listened to recently. So
Project Hail Mary, really? That's a fictional book?
It's a sci-fi. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. It was fantastic. And it really scratched my process and my science sort of nerdiness.
I'm going to put it on the list.
Same guy who did The Martian.
Oh, yes. Got it. Mm-hmm. Very cool. All right. So we checked two boxes in one, the book, the podcast and the book one. Let's go right to movie. What's your favorite movie?
My favorite movie is The Nightmare Before Christmas, the Tim Burton film.
Mm-hmm. That's a first on the podcast. Good movie. Nice. All right. So next up, what is the worst advice you ever received?
The worst advice I ever received. That's a good one. The worst advice. I tend to not catalog the worst advice I've ever received. I think it's probably the idea that I need to temper my impatience in creating new solutions. I think that was the worst advice that I've ever received. If I tried to follow that through my life, I think I would not be where I am today. A lot of times jumping into a blue ocean space and really being the first one to tackle problems has been very rewarding for me. And it might be frustrating for some. So that was probably bad advice I received to not do that.
Gotcha. Good to know. Now flip that equation. What is the best advice you ever received?
The best advice I ever received was more in the form of a mantra, which is just to internalize the fact that perfect is the enemy of great.
Yes.
And that's actually a pretty common one in the process improvement space. But I tend to be a perfectionist, and really internalizing that. And somebody, an early mentor, really tried to beat that into me. And it's really changed the cadence and the pace at which I approach my work and my life generally.
I used to be the same way younger. I had to kind of get past it, be like, Sean, it's never going to be perfect. Get it out to the market and let your audience shape it from there. Don't worry about it, right? Yeah. Otherwise, you could be in analysis paralysis, polishing your tool or software until the end of time. And it's like, nope, time box it. Let's go to market. Cool. All right. Last question here is the time machine question. If you could go back in time to give your younger self advice, what age would you visit? What would you say?
I would go back to probably the end of middle school, early high school, and just give myself some social advice, to be honest. I was a very socially awkward and was a late bloomer. And I think I could have gotten a lot farther if I just had some simple advice on how to be more self-confident, how to be more assertive, how to communicate better, And I think that would have gone a long way to fast track what was an awkward few years for me. So that was that'd probably be my point. Because other than that, everything went, you know, iterated in a fairly smooth direction.
Sure. No, that's great. All right. And where can the audience reach you?
Audience can reach me at Truvel, sam@truvel.com. That's the easiest way if you want to reach out to me directly. And also, I'm the only Drawshack on LinkedIn. So if you just look up Sam Drawshack, I encourage you to connect with me, send me LinkedIn messages. That's also a very easy way to find me. And if you just type in my name with Google, I've got pretty good SEO. So you can find me wherever Sam Drawshack appears.
Nice. We'll get all the links listed below. But thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation.
All right. We'll see you, Sam. Hey, I'd like to say thank you for checking out this podcast. I know there's a lot of other podcasts out there you could be listening to, so thanks for spending some time with me. And if you have a moment, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. The more reviews we get, especially 5-star reviews, the higher this podcast will rank in Apple. So thanks for doing that. And remember, this show is for entertainment purposes only. If you heard any stocks mentioned on this podcast, please do not buy or sell those stocks based solely on what you hear. All right. Thanks for your time. We'll see you.